Hi, everybody. I'm Beth Spicer, and I am the host of the Happy Parents and Kids Summit. And I am super excited to be here with my guest today, Bonnie Harris. And in a minute, I'm going to tell you why you're going to want to listen to her and the amazing information that she has to share with you so she can help you and your children. But first, I just want to tell for those of you that are just tuning in for the first time what the Happy Parents and Kids Summit is all about. So I'm a mom, and I'm a parent, and I have lots of friends that are moms and dads and parents, and we all just really want to be happy, joyful, and have fun with our children. However, as I've discovered, my clients have discovered, and my friends have said they discovered, that it's just not as easy as it sounds, and often it's a struggle. We have work, relationships, lots of stressors, our expectations, our children's expectations, and many things that often get in the way of us being happy and our kids being happy. So that's what the Happy Parents and Kids Summit is all about. First, it's a personal journey of mine to explore how myself and my son can find more happiness, and a journey that provides you with valuable information and an opportunity to explore this in your life. Second, I see a real need for this. Parents want to learn new strategies and skills and explore the mindset that happy parents use so they can be happier and their kids can be happier. So what I've done is I put together what I believe to be the top experts in the world on parenting and happiness. They have huge success rates, and they're going to teach you personally how you can achieve more of this in your life. So that's what the Happy Parents and Kids Summit is all about. It's a journey, a personal journey, and one that I hope provides you and your family with lots of opportunities. I highly recommend that you're on every call. I hope you're going to join us, and I hope you take time every day to make being a happy parent a priority in your life. So let me tell you a little bit about Bonnie before we go into our interview. Bonnie Harris, she's a child and behavior specialist, and she's been doing this for over 25 years. She's a director of Connective Parenting, the founder of the Parent Guidance Center. She counsels parents, teaches parenting workshops, leads professional trainings, speaks internationally, and she's the author of two books, When Your Kids Push Your Buttons and Confident Parents, Remarkable Kids, 8 Principles to Raising Kids You'll Love to Live With. She's also a parent and a grandparent. Welcome, Bonnie.
Thank you, Beth. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are so happy you're here, and we cannot wait to learn from you. So, you know, happiness is happiness something that we should be aspiring for?
Well, I think, as you say, we all want to be happy. And when I ask parents what they want most for their children, to be happy is usually the first thing they say. I just want my kids to be happy. That's really what's most important. And it's interesting because happiness is something kind of new to us. Happiness is a late 20th century commodity. Rural American families, where every day was focused on food and shelter, didn't think much about how are we going to be happy. So happiness kind of came in big and small moments then, but it was more of a spontaneous feeling, not a sought-after goal. And I think nowadays it's a real sought-after goal, and we have this idea that if we're not happy, there's something wrong with us, and we better take an antidepressant or something. But we certainly want our children to be happy. But I find in my work that the biggest trap for parents in this area is that we think as parents that it is our responsibility to make our children happy. When we have this goal for our children, when we think what I really want for my child more than anything else is for my child to be happy, then it becomes my responsibility as a parent to make sure my child is happy. And that is one of the biggest myths that I want to bust as someone to help parents on the road to happiness, because I think ironically the more we focus on our children's happiness, the more we interfere with that actually happening. So that's what I'd like to talk about today.
Yeah, I had to kind of take a deep breath and process that for a minute. because
yeah.
I know as a parent myself, my primary goal, and I often put it way above my happiness, is how can I help my child be happy and what
right.
can I do?
Right.
So kind of thinking that we may not be responsible for our child's happiness, I mean, I had to take a deep breath when I heard that one. Could you talk a little bit more
yes.
about that?
Yes. And what I hope is that when parents understand this, it will come as a great relief. Because when we work on making our children happy, and when we think every day we get up, what do I have to do to ensure my child's happiness today? We get so balled up in all the stuff we think we have to teach them and prepare them for and protect them from. And as the world gets more and more complicated, the job gets harder and harder and harder. So if I think that I am responsible for my child's happiness, then guess whose fault it is when my child is unhappy, when my child is disappointed, when my child is angry about anything, when my child is sad, guess whose fault that is? If I take responsibility for my child's happiness. So when we expect that that is our job as a responsible, conscientious parent, then if my child is anything but happy, I'm a failure. And therefore, I can't help my child when she is unhappy or disappointed or angry or sad, because I'm so invested in that happiness that I'm all balled up in the problem with my child. So the boundary is not clear. Having clear boundaries with our children, I think, is one of the essentials to being happy as a parent. And allowing our children to be happy. So that having a clear boundary means knowing whose problem is whose. I don't take responsibility for my child's problems, and I'll explain this, because this is another one you have to take a deep breath on. I'm not going to take responsibility for my child's problems, and I certainly don't expect my child to take responsibility for my problems. But we as parents cross that boundary back and forth all the time. When we say, you make me so mad, why won't you ever listen to me? How many times do I have to tell you? We are in fact saying to our child, you are responsible for my behavior, for my feelings. You make me so mad? No, sir, that is absolutely not true. What I'm saying with that is you are responsible for my anger. If you would behave differently, then I wouldn't be angry. And that's not the way it works. I choose to be angry or not. My button gets pushed. That's my button. That is not my child. So if I get angry, that's my choice. Nobody makes me that. Nobody makes me yell 10 times to get my child to listen to me. That's my choice. So the other half of I am not responsible for my child's happiness, I'm not responsible for any of my child's feelings, I'm not even responsible for my child's behavior, is a huge shift in thinking.
Mm-hmm.
The other half of that is, however, I am 100% responsible for everything that I say and do. and for my feelings. That's my responsibility. I'm responsible for my problems, for my feelings, and for my behavior. And that's where the hard part of parenting comes, because we often want to pass that responsibility on to our children or our family members or our parents or the government or the IRS or whatever. You know, we don't take responsibility. So if I'm yelling at my child, if I'm saying something, you know, that I regret, we all do this, right? This is what happens when we get our buttons pushed. We react in ways that just comes flowing out automatically, and as soon as it's over, we regret it and wish we hadn't said it or done it. And when that happens, we need to take responsibility for that instead of blaming our children for making us do that.
Absolutely. That makes sense. I do have to say, as you were talking, what I kept kind of hearing the question run around in my head was, this sort of, I don't want to say directly, but kind of sort of, goes against what, at least the messages, because I don't want to say the other experts are telling you that you're responsible for your kids, but the message or the way I interpret it, and I think the way other parents probably interpret other parenting experts' message, is you are responsible for your kids. It's your responsibility to raise them and make them happy. So I'm just feeling a little wow now.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of trying to incorporate that. Can you help me? And I'm assuming other people are probably feeling that way too a little bit.
We are certainly responsible for our children. We're responsible for housing them, for feeding them, for nurturing them, for supporting them. We're responsible, I believe, for being understanding and empathic with them. We're responsible for, as I say, every single thing we say and do. That's our responsibility. How our children feel about that is their responsibility. So it's certainly my responsibility. If I choose to be really disrespectful and angry toward my child, if I choose to call my child names and label her and compare him to his brother and on, that is my responsibility. That has everything to do with what I am saying and doing. And the end result of that, the consequence of that behavior is going to be, I would predict, a very unhappy child. So, but if I take responsibility for my behavior, and I know that it is my responsibility to be respectful of my child at all times, and we can be just as respectful when we're setting a limit, we can be just as respectful when we're giving them direction on something. When I take responsibility for that, then the consequence of that is going to be a child who feels respected and who feels understood and heard, and therefore probably a happy child. So
okay,
I'm not.
Helps. Thank you.
Does that help? Good. I am not saying we're not responsible for our kids. But I am saying we're not responsible for making them happy. So, however, their happiness is often an end result of what I say and do. So it's my job as a parent to work with my child to know how they are responding to me. For instance, I have two kids. We're grown now. My first child was a boy, and he was one of those piece of cake kids. You know, he was just the easiest, sweetest, greatest, happy kids. When he was two, he looked up at me and he said to me, "I happy inside." And oh my God, if that doesn't warm a parent's heart. I had nothing to do with that, really. I think at the time I thought, wow, I must be a fabulous parent. I must just know everything there is to know. And I look at other parents having problems and I think, what's your problem? Why? This is not easy. This is not hard. My kid is happy. So I had this for 4.5 years, thinking I could do no wrong. And then my daughter was born. And everything I thought, believed, understood about parenting, I had to throw out the window and start all over again. My daughter was cut from a different cloth. My daughter, as soon as she started to walk, it was resistant, defiant, angry. She just didn't want to do anything. She was a very happy infant. But as soon as she started walking, it was like, don't make me do this. It felt like she was just pushing life away from her. Mm. And she had a real struggle as a child. And so I had to really learn about her temperament and understand where she was coming from, because it was the opposite direction from her brother. And so in a lot of ways, I kind of got with the program, because I was also teaching parent education at the time. However, we were in major power struggles with each other, and I'm sure every listener out there has experienced at least one power struggle with their child. And my definition of a power struggle is two children the same age out to win. So whenever we engage in a power struggle with our child, we take ourselves right to that level, and we have to win. And if we're engaged in it, the only way out of it is to win. And that means we have to make our child lose. And so what I had to come to understand was that I was always out to win with her, and she was, of course, out to win on her side of the power struggle. So anyway, we fought every morning, I won't go through the whole story, but I had to learn that she was not out to get me, which I was convinced of. You know, I would look at that face in the morning, that bottom lip sticking out 3 feet, and I was convinced she was out to get me. She was doing this on purpose, and she was bound and determined to ruin my day. And so I got furious with her. And then one morning, nothing changed from her, but my head did a 180-degree flip. And that was my change in perception of her, that she wasn't out to get me. She was miserable. And you see, when I thought she was out to get me, I couldn't. That then prompted feelings of anger and resentment and guilt and control in me, which then led to my reactions to her, yelling at her, telling her what she had to do and to stop doing this and don't do that and hurry up, get off the floor and get dressed and all this stuff. That's what I call the emotional chain reaction that has to do with understanding how we get our buttons pushed. I made an assumption about her that she was out to get me. That caused me to feel the way I felt, and those feelings led me to behave the way I did. So what my buttons work is all about is looking at those assumptions and reframing them and looking at our expectations and adjusting them. But my assumption that she was out to get me changed to she's miserable. And as soon as I thought she's miserable, she's unhappy, she's having a hard time, the overall reframed assumption that I tell parents all the time, that is kind of my mantra, is your child is not being a problem, your child is having a problem. So when I saw that she was having a problem, then I felt nothing but compassion for her. And as soon as I felt compassion for her, then I could be helpful. Then I thought, how can I help her? And that took me into a whole different mindset. And so then I could be understanding, and I could be empathic, and I could talk to her about how she hated getting up in the morning and how she didn't want to put on her clothes and get out of her nice, warm, cozy pajamas, and she didn't want to go off to school and say goodbye to me. And she's melting into my body. It's like, you understand. For the first time, I think, she got that I understood. And that's what we all want. You know, when we think about, you know, think about when you're having a hard day, when something really terrible is going on or has just happened to you, and you go home and you tell your spouse or you share it with a friend or whatever, what do you want? Do you want your spouse to tell you what to do about it? Do you want your friend to tell you to cheer up? It's really not that big a deal. No. You want to be understood. You want somebody to say, wow, that sucks. You know, you just want somebody to say, oh, my God, that's really hard. Or to give you a shoulder to cry on. That's what our children want. And they want us to give them that shoulder to cry on, that arm to be wrapped up in, that understanding that helps them feel so belonging and warm and cozy in your company. Not, they don't want you to tell them what to do. They don't want you to tell them what not to do. They don't want you to lecture them. That's not what they want. And I'm not saying there aren't plenty of times that we have to do that as parents. But when they're unhappy, when they're disappointed, what they want more than anything is to hear, this is really hard right now. Or, I get it, how disappointing it is when you don't get what you want. I bet I would feel the same way if I were you. Or, you're really angry at me right now because I said just what you didn't want me to say. See, when we get into feeling responsible for their happiness, then I can't do that. I can't just acknowledge how they're feeling. I have to do something differently to try to make them happy. I have to give them what they're disappointed about not getting. I have to fix it for them when they're having a problem with a friend or a teacher or a sibling. I have to do something about it when I feel responsible for it. When I know it's not my problem, then and only then I can be disengaged enough to give them exactly what they want, which is understanding. And then I can say, I really get it that you're disappointed about that. I really get that you wanted this to happen. And that's something I have to say no to because I'm your mom and that's my job. And then I can allow the disappointment. I can allow the anger. I can allow the sadness. I can allow all these feelings that make us rich, whole human beings. And if I protect my child from all those feelings by fixing things for them or by rescuing them, then what I'm doing is a huge disservice to them, because that's what then leads to them feeling like these special little prince and princesses who should have everything given to them and have exactly what they want. And that's a big problem we're dealing with now.
Right.
But when I can allow them, let me say a little thing about self-esteem.
Okay.
We went through in the 80s and 90s in the parenting field, we went through this big surge over self-esteem. It was everything, every title of any workshop I taught had to have raising your child's self-esteem in it and how to do that. And self-esteem was the big buzzword. And we thought as parents that it was our responsibility to give our children self-esteem. And we completely misinterpreted what self-esteem was. So how we did it was with lots of praise, with lots of rewards, with lots of you're so wonderful and this is so special and you're the best drawer and and every kid on the t-ball team got a trophy and every, you know, the pizza parties and the rewards and the sticker charts and the gold stars just became, you know, ubiquitous in classrooms, and everything was all about praising, telling all the children how wonderful they were. And then they became 20-somethings and got into the corporate world, and corporations had to hire praise consultants to give these young people praise all the time about what they were doing, because otherwise they'd quit. I mean, I read about this in the newspaper. There was one praise consultant who was hired to go around and sprinkle confetti on some of the workers there whenever they accomplished anything at all.
Wow.
Yeah. So self-esteem cannot be given. Self-esteem cannot be taught. Self-esteem comes from dealing with a difficulty, getting through it, accomplishing a hard task, and feeling that accomplishment. So knowing that, you know, I've got a really hard test coming up and I've got to study really hard for it, and in order to do that, I've got to not go out with my friends or not watch television. I've got to go up in my room and I've got to study and I've got to think about this and I've got to work really hard. And then the grade that satisfies me on that test, then I'm going to feel self-esteem. I actually shouldn't use grades, because grades is another form of rewards. But that it's a sense of accomplishment. If stuff is handed to us, like I really want this toy because all my friends have it and it's so special and it's so wonderful. If my parent wants me to be happy and gives me the toy, that happiness is going to last for, you know, maybe 5 minutes. If I have to earn the money to get that toy, and I have to do some hard work to do that, I'm going to feel much happier with that toy when I know that I have earned it than when it's been given to me. And so in order to do that, we have to allow our children to experience disappointment. Does that make sense?
So, Bonnie, I know as you've been, I mean, all the information you just gave us was absolutely wonderful, and I know my mind's just kind of going all over the place, which I'm sure many other people are experiencing the same thing. And I really appreciate you sharing the struggles that you had with your daughter, as I've had some of the same struggles with my son. He's younger, but I can see he just has a personality that's very dominant and expressive. And I know there are other parents that have children that, you know, that things are a little bumpier with. So,
oh, yeah, a lot bumpier with.
yeah, you know, and it's really like the thought that keeps coming in my mind is, well, okay, so I understand everything that you just said, but when my child's unhappy, and you may have already answered this question, but just maybe to answer it a little, so it's just in the context, how do we handle it? When our child's unhappy and they're mad, or, you know, my child's 2.5, so he's throwing a tantrum or running around because he can't regulate his emotions.
Yeah.
So what am I responsible for, and how do we help them through that, whether they're teenagers or whether they're young children like mine?
Right. Well, I think the key word is, how do I help them? And when I can think about helping rather than how do I make this go away, then it's a different thing. If I think about helping my child, then I'm not trying to figure out how to do it for them or protect them from it or eliminate it. If I can think, how do I help my child, then my child is really angry because, well, let's say it's because of something I have done. Let's say I've told him he's got to turn off his video game or get off television or something and come to dinner or whatever is the next thing, and he's furious. If I feel so responsible for his happiness that I then say, okay, you know, go ahead, stay on, or I lose it and say, fine, you know, just watch your television show, I don't care, or I explode and say, there's no television for a week. All of that is part and parcel of taking responsibility for his happiness. If I know that, if I expect that he's going to be unhappy when I set a limit that right now he doesn't like, then I'm not going to get so explosive when the time comes when he does get unhappy. So if I say, it's time to turn off the television, and he digs in his heels, and then maybe I give a choice. Would you like me to turn it off, or would you like to turn it off yourself? That's usually really helpful with young children, when you give them a choice like that, because probably with a grump and a sigh, they're going to turn it off. But if they don't, then you will say, okay, I see you've chosen to have me turn it off. I turn it off, a tantrum ensues. What do I do if I take responsibility for that and I think I've made him miserable? Then I've got to do something to make him happy. But if I realize that he had a really hard time with my limit, he is really unhappy that I turned off the television, with the attitude, of course he is. Why shouldn't he be? Of course he's unhappy about that. Then I am going to be in a much calmer frame of mind in dealing with it, so I can allow him to be angry. And I can let that all come out, and I don't have to say, tell him why he shouldn't be angry. I gave you plenty of warnings, you know. You've got to listen to me. I told you 3 times that the television was going to have to go off. That just creates more and more friction. But if I don't take responsibility, then I can say, of course you're angry, and I can just sit there and bear witness to his anger. And I can allow the anger. And when the anger is purged, then I can say to him, you were really, really mad that I made you turn off the television. Period. You know, it's that I get it. I totally get it. And then he just kind of collapses in your arms. And then you say you really were hoping that you could watch more television, and I said it was time to turn it off, and you didn't want to turn it off, and I turned it off, and you were very, very angry about it. Then what I'm doing is normalizing his experience. Mm-hmm. I'm letting him know that his anger, his feelings, his frustration is absolutely normal and understood. And then he comes out of it, and he can move on. When I have made him feel badly for his anger, when I have gotten angry at him for being angry, then he comes out of it with all this muck, with all this, what's wrong? I'm not supposed to be like this. I can't ever do what Mom wants me to do. I'm going to show her. I'm going to take it out on my little sister. And all of this stuff goes on. So it's just letting our children have their feelings without taking it personally, without feeling responsible, because when we feel responsible for their feelings, that means everything they feel, I'm going to take personally. And then I can't be separate from their problem in a way that I can help.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have time for a little story about another story about my daughter.
Absolutely.
When she was little, she just had a lot of struggles coming into this world. It was really hard for her. She is also, and I want to say this for all the parents listening out there, she was a child who temperamentally would not take no for an answer and would not be told what to do. And I believe to the depths of my soul that that is temperament, that that does not mean this is a defiant, oppositional child. So many of these kids are getting diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder. And that, when it gets to that kind of defiance, then it's the parent, then it's the responsibility of what the parent is bringing to the situation that is creating this huge resistance from the child. But anyway, I don't want to get off track here. But she...
It's okay.
I really do believe that this is a temperament. You can't tell me what to do. And we as parents have the responsibility then to work with that temperament, to learn how to set the limits we need to set, be firm, be consistent, be all of the, you know, all of that structure that our children need in a way that's not telling them no all the time, but it's telling them no in a different way. It's giving them choices. It's using problem solving and all of that. But anyway, she had some terrible nightmares. She had a really hard time getting older. She didn't have any grandparents. Both my parents and my husband's parents were dead when she was born. And you would think she didn't have anything to compare that to, that she wouldn't really know, but oh my God, she missed having grandparents so desperately. These were not things I could do anything about. I couldn't take away her nightmares. I couldn't give her grandparents, right? It was pretty obvious.
Absolutely.
That I couldn't take responsibility for that. But she was having so much pain, and I was just feeling responsible. And one night she woke up in the middle of the night screaming bloody murder. And I had to get her into my bed, and I had to massage her for a while to calm her down and get her so that she was not hyperventilating anymore. And we had done a lot of work together. I had used every trick in my bag of parenting paraphernalia and done role plays with her and all this stuff. And I was at the end of my, you know, tether with this. And I said to her, Molly, would you like to talk to somebody else about this? And she said, she's like five. And she said, would I? It was like, oh, my goodness, she really wants to. And the next, I finally got her back to sleep. I told her I was going to call my friend Betsy, who is my most favorite therapist in the whole world. And the first words out of her mouth the next morning were, have you called Betsy yet? And I said, no, not yet, but I will today. Anyway, she went to see my friend Betsy, who did some play therapy with her, five or six sessions, and it really eased things for her. But the important thing here is that the first session was me with Betsy. And I sat on the couch telling Betsy about all of this pain that Molly was experiencing. And I was sitting there with tears streaming down my face. And it was clear to her that I was totally in this pain with Molly. And she was so sweet and understanding. And she said to me, but Bonnie, it doesn't help Molly if you get in her pain with her. And I tell you, Beth, it was like a chandelier going off in my head. It was the most powerful thing anybody has ever said to me, and I have taught it ever since. When we get in our pain with our children and take responsibility for it, we cannot help them. And it was so meaningful to me that I understood her immediately, and I was able to then separate myself from Molly's pain. So I knew this was her journey, this was her life, these were her struggles. And because I could separate myself, I was then able to just be there with her and hold her and understand and give her the words, the comforting words she needed to hear, because I wasn't trying to make it go away. And I really do believe that's what we all want from our loved ones. We just want someone to help us through, but not solve it for us. She got through it herself because she felt that strong foundation. She felt, you know, solid there with her parents, and so she just had to get through the struggle herself. And there wasn't anything I could do about it. And when I did try, I just got in the muck with her. So
thank you for sharing that with us. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, to me, that is one of the most powerful things that I want to teach parents, is how to maintain that separation. And it does not mean at all that you are cold and uncaring, just the opposite. It's when we take responsibility for that happiness or that pain that we really muck it up, and everybody ends up, you know, getting emotionally enmeshed with each other. And I believe that both kids and parents are so much happier when we take responsibility for our own problems, and we're there to help and understand, but not fix or rescue. And we let our kids experience their own journey. And I often say to parents, how do we think we have the power to take away or to give our children happiness, take away their sadness or give them happiness? Isn't that pretty presumptuous of us to think that we know what's going to make them happy? we don't even know what's going to make them happy. Yeah, we buy them an ice cream cone and they're happy for 5 minutes. But, you know, in the meantime, they're going to be mad about something else. And then we get so angry because they're so unappreciative. That's another thing that I deal with a lot with parents. That appreciation button, that look at all, after all I've done for you, after everything I've given you, look at the life you have. There's this expectation that they need to be appreciative. But every single thing we give to our children, every opportunity we provide for them is our choice. We're doing it because we want to do it. Not because, or it shouldn't be because, we then are going to expect gratitude from our children. And the irony is, when we expect and anticipate gratitude and we don't get it, we get furious and enraged. But when we don't expect it, we usually get it back in spades.
Right.
Which is extremely fulfilling.
You know, this is what you just described, and we're running out of time here. We're running a little over, so sorry, everybody. But I know what you just talked about with your daughter is a huge emotional thing for me, just because I'm having similar issues with my son. Uh-huh. So just personally for myself, and I mean, I'm sure everyone benefited from it, but from me and the other parents out there with children that are having just a really tough emotional time, thank you for going in depth so much and really sharing your story. It was very helpful for me, and I hope it was helpful for them too.
Good.
So thank you.
Good.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, sometimes the tendency is just to say what you should or should not do.
Yeah.
So hearing about your struggle was, you know, it made me not feel so alone, and I'm sure other parents too. Plus, you also gave us great tools on how we can kind of navigate that struggle, and I'm sure we could have a much longer conversation about it. We just don't have time.
Yeah.
So
I know.
So
let me.
I know. I know. There's so many things to talk about. So kind of.
I know. So let me just say
kinda,
that my daughter is now grown and very happy.
Good.
She's a composer and is a creative genius, I think. And I just admire her more than anyone on the planet. And she's extremely grateful for the way she was raised. So
thank you for sharing that because, well, I appreciate that because I know I can see my son's behavior through the lens of this very headstrong behavior, him knowing what he wants and where he's going to go. That is going to serve him so greatly later on in life.
Right.
I'm personally having a struggle with it, and we're having a struggle together now of how to manage the fact that he's only 2.5. And
yeah, I know.
I do know a little bit more than him. And I, you know, things have to be done a certain way. There's a lot of room for negotiation, but you can't stay up all night. That's just the way it goes.
Right, yeah.
So, or I'm not willing for him to stay up all night because I enjoy sleeping myself. So,
Right. The balance is really important. Your needs and rights are just as important as his.
Exactly. So thank you for sharing that. And just kind of, in closing, because you did just go over so much information, and, you know, what would be one thing that parents could start doing now so they could be happier and their children could be happier?
It's a great question, and what comes to mind right off the top is to keep that mantra in your head. When your children are doing things that are unacceptable or that you don't like or that are showing pain, that your child is having a problem, not being a problem. I cannot tell you what that shift in perception can do for you as the parent in terms of what it, how it leads you to behave with your child. So just thinking, my child is not being a problem, my child is having a problem. So I would
That's a huge shift in thinking.
Yeah, it's huge.
Thank you, and thank you for reiterating that, because I know I, before I asked you that question, I was thinking about your daughter, and that kind of helps bring it back to something that I can start doing right now and a new way of thinking that, you know, when I pick up my son later on today, I can start shifting into a little bit and playing around with it. So thank you.
Yeah, good. Good.
So we're out of time, but I know before we go that you had something that you wanted to tell everyone about.
Well, the free gift, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And
you wanted to give them all something.
I have a teleseminar, the recording of an 8-week teleseminar that I did recently that is available on my website for purchase, and it's an 8-week segment on when your kids push your buttons, which is all about helping us figure ourselves out as parents so that we can really be the parent that we always expected we were going to be. So what I would like to give away is the recording of the first session of part one. It's divided in two parts. It can be purchased as part one or part two, and each part has four sessions. So I would like to give away the MP3 of the first session, which has a lot of material in it about the emotional chain reaction that I was talking about how we create this gap with our children, and I think the owning the problem thing is on there, but there's a lot of great information about our agenda and our children's agenda and how they fight and power struggles and all this stuff. So that will be available for everyone.
Wonderful. And thank you so much. And I just want to make sure everyone knows that it's free. It's not, I know you said purchase, but
yeah,
we're going to send it to you guys free.
Exactly. And then if they would like to go further, then they can purchase more of it. But that segment is free. And
absolutely. And thank you for sharing that with us.
Sure. And I would just like people to know that I have a newsletter that I send out twice monthly. The first part of the month I give a lesson on connective parenting, just some lesson on something, and the second part of the month I answer readers' questions. And so that can be subscribed to, free of course, on my website, which is bonnieharris.com. There's lots and lots of information on my website, lots of articles, and you can even search topics.
Well, thank you. You have a wealth of knowledge, and I know that you helped me, and I'm sure that you helped everyone else that's listening. So I just really want to thank you for your time and sharing all your information with us.
You're welcome, and thanks for giving me this opportunity to talk to everyone.
Well, thank you. And you guys, I know it's gone long, so we're going to close the interview right now, but I just want to remind you guys that tomorrow the next interview will go up at 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And again, I suggest that you listen to it first thing in the morning, start your day off right. And for those of you that can't listen to it first thing in the morning, that are in other time zones or other countries, just set a recurring event in your calendar. Set a date with yourself for lunch or for dinner and make being happy a priority in your life and your children. Thank you so much, and I look forward to connecting with you tomorrow.